Amazon 5-star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by a real serious improv podcaster. Tonight's review, Spatula for the Stars. When I'm dead and civilization eventually collapses, this spatula will remain. It will be the only rune uncovered by some unknown species of the future upon which they base their assumptions of our existence.
Eggs!
They will posit.
These extinct people like to eat their eggs! And this was their primary tool for cooking them. Let us teleport and put this device in the Milky Way exhibit.
5 stars, Zachary. Find your perfect gift this holiday on Amazon.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. To listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts for ad-free episodes. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Imagine two puzzles, each missing crucial pieces for decades. The first, a killing spree across Georgia in the 70s. 5 victims, executed and dumped like secrets in the countryside. The second, a young woman's brutal death in 1999. Her dismembered, unidentified remains scattered near an Atlantic glass factory. For decades, both puzzles sat unsolved. And for decades, it seemed like they always would. Then in 2003, something extraordinary happened. The arrest of a man known as the Flint River Killer didn't just bring answers to the first case, he also provided the missing piece to the second. Because the unidentified young woman murdered in 1999 turned out to be the serial killer's own daughter. It was a shocking connection, 2 mysteries, 2 generations, suddenly colliding. What followed was a 20-year pursuit of justice, a story of dangerous assumptions, investigative blind spots, and the shocking moment when a jury questioned whether the most obvious suspect might actually be the wrong one. Join me now as we revisit the mysterious murder of Melissa Wolfenbarger, a 21-year-old mother of 2 who vanished in 1999. You'll hear how a confessed serial killer begged police to help find his missing daughter before realizing she was already in the morgue, and how, even after decades of searching, the truth about Melissa's murder remains far more complicated than anyone ever imagined. The Flint River in Georgia runs slow and dark through the countryside south of Atlanta, winding through swamps thick with cypress and fog. It was in these murky waters in December 1977 two duck hunters stumbled across a pair of bodies in the water. Both victims were women. Their remains had been weighed down with cinder blocks and chains, each killed by a single gunshot to the head. They were soon identified as 45-year-old Betty Jo Eflin and 31-year-old Liddy Evans. Detectives began their investigation by looking at the men closest to them, Betty's husband, Fred Wyatt, and Liddy's boyfriend, Joe Cleveland, a local firefighter. But disturbingly, neither man could be found. Fred Wyatt was the first to turn up. Investigators learned he supposedly died weeks earlier in a car crash, his vehicle colliding head-on with a moving train. At the time, his death was written off as an accident, but now detectives suspected something more. Fred's body was exhumed, and an autopsy revealed he hadn't died in a crash at all. He'd been shot in the head. 4 months later, Joe Cleveland's body surfaced in another river 60 miles away, weighed down the same way, with the same fatal wound as Fred. The mysterious killing spree stunned local communities, with newspapers calling the unknown culprit the Flint River Killer. But despite intense publicity and heavy resources, the case eventually went cold, frozen in time for the next 25 years. Then, in late 2002, a special cold case unit reopened the file. With DNA testing now available, investigators could confirm what had only been guesswork in the 70s. The results came fast, and they soon identified the killer as Carl Patton, Fred Wyatt's own nephew. In February 2003, the now 54-year-old Patton was arrested at his home, and as he sat handcuffed in the back of a patrol car, his wife Norma confessed.
Carl was arrested on the morning of February 23rd. He was arrested for murder.
You just heard Norma Patton, who'd been married to Carl since they were both teenagers.
I answered all the questions that they asked, yes. I was given immunity for my testimony against him.
The reason Norma needed immunity was because she'd helped her husband plan and cover up at least two of the murders. Atlanta defense attorney Joel McDermott explains Norma's role in the murders.
Carl Patton committed a string of murders in the late 1970s. He was suspected of those murders for a long time. He was investigated, but they were not prosecuted and proved until 2003. Norma Patton, his wife, helped him directly commit at least two of those murders, to dispose of the bodies, to clean up the crime scenes, and to wrap up the bodies and dispose of them. And the only reason Norma didn't go to prison like Carl did was because she got immunity to testify against him.
Not only did Norma tell detectives what had happened, she also explained why.
Some of those were for personal revenge. Some of those were contract killings for money. And at least two of those were murders of his own friends because they knew too much. All of the victims were either close friends or family members. Norma Patton, in two of those murders, was a co-defendant. She confessed to planning two cold-blooded murders, cleaning up the blood, bleaching the floor, etc.
After Carl's arrest, he also admitted to another murder for hire he'd carried out in 1973, bringing the total victim count of the Flint River Killer to 5. Astonishingly, despite Norma's admissions, helping plan, execute, and cover up at least two murders, her punishment amounted to 1 year of probation and a $1,000 fine. But that wasn't the most interesting thing Norma had shared with detectives in 2003.
Wanted me to help him and to talk to him about what Carl had done. And I told him if he wanted my help, that he needed to find my daughter because she was missing.
By then, Carl and Norma's daughter, Melissa Wolfenbarger, had already been gone for 4 years. The 21-year-old mother of two disappeared around Christmas 1998 and hadn't been seen since. For detectives, this was a first. A confessed serial killer asking police to help find his own daughter. Nevertheless, the detectives promised to do everything in their power to find her. Melissa Dawn Patton was born on September 9, 1977, the same year her father was committing four of the five Flint River murders.
Melissa was very loving. She would do, she loved you, you would know it, definitely.
7 years younger than her big sister, Tina May, Melissa was known as the quieter, more reserved of the two Patton children.
It was me, Melissa, my dad, and our mom. I mean, there were 7 years between us, so when I was seven and was out playing and stuff, she was a baby. So we wasn't that close. I mean, we lived in the same house and we played outside and stuff, but we wasn't, like, 1 year between us that kind of close.
Still, Tina May remembers Melissa's love for animals. While other kids dreamed of being astronauts or firefighters, Melissa dreamed of becoming a veterinarian. Throughout childhood, she did well in school and stayed out of trouble. But according to her mother, Norma, things changed when Melissa became a teenager.
Melissa was the one I bonded with more so than Tina May. Melissa was my baby. The difference with Tina May, she would get mad when she wouldn't get away, so she would run away. Melissa, we didn't have that issue. We just, until she met Chris.
Melissa met Christopher Wolfenbarger in school when they were both around 15 or 16 years old. According to Norma, his influence had an immediate impact on her daughter.
I didn't want them seeing each other because I felt she was too young. Melissa started seeing him when she got into high school. When she met him, she started running away to be with him. Well, she would not come home from school, and I would try to find her and turn her in as a runaway when I wasn't able to find her. Well, she just kept running away. I got worried about it after they, you know, the first runaway, not so much, but after she kept running away, then I determined that I felt like I needed to put her on birth control. I would watch her take the birth control pill, and I thought she was taking them, but come to find out, she was not taking them.
Christopher would later say that he and Melissa saw themselves as small-time criminals, comparing themselves to Bonnie and Clyde. Twice, they stole Carl Patton's car and drove it all the way to Oklahoma, committing petty crimes all along the way. Each time, Norma contacted police, reporting them as runaways and car thieves. By the end of 1994, both Melissa and Christopher were 17. That Christmas, Norma discovered Melissa was pregnant.
I found out before Christmas that she was pregnant. After she got pregnant in February, her and Chris got married because she was pregnant. The day that she got married, it's the day she moved out.
Melissa gave birth to her daughter Christina in August 1995. 11 months later, in July 1996, she gave birth to her son Joey. According to attorney Joel McDermott, the young couple struggled under the weight of their situation.
They were both 17 when they got married. They had two children, very young, in very close succession. When Melissa was still pregnant with her second child in 1996, she went to Christopher's mother, Kathy Wolfenbarger. Melissa asked her if she would take custody of their children temporarily, and she did. Melissa got in some legal trouble the next year in Gwinnett County and went on probation for theft.
By the end of 1997, Melissa was working at a Waffle House in Atlanta alongside her older sister, Tina May.
All of a sudden, one day, somebody comes up to me at Waffle House and says, "Guess who you're going to be training tonight?" And I'm like, "Who?" They said, "Your sister." And I'm like, "What?" And she was married. She was already married to Chris. Well, she worked third shift with me. She was a server.
Not long after, Tina May suspected Melissa was being abused by Christopher.
Melissa was running late this time. She was running late getting there, and I was standing in the back by the office door, just looking out front, watching what was going on, because it wasn't time for me to go out front yet. The manager was counting the money for us to take out, and Melissa came in. She came through the swinging door at the back where I was, and I looked at her, and she had tears in her eyes. And her nose was red, her eyes were red, because that's always how she got when she was crying. We all do when we're crying. And I noticed that she had like red marks around her throat. And I said, Melissa, what's wrong with you? What's going on? Wait a minute. Is that a handprint around your throat? And she just looked at me and her eyes filled with tears. And I said, did Chris do that to you? And she just looked at me. She didn't really say nothing. And then I just turned and was going to go out the door. I was going to go say something to Chris. She wouldn't let me. She stopped me. She said, you'll make it worse.
In 1998, Melissa and Christopher moved from the suburbs south of Atlanta into the city itself, living in a duplex on Brookline Avenue, owned by Christopher's grandmother.
When Christopher and Melissa moved up to Brookline in 1998, the children did not go with them. The children lived with Christopher's mother in Stockbridge and later in Locust Grove, Georgia.
The countdown is on. Holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't find anywhere else. Don't wait. The most meaningful gifts get scooped up fast. And now's the perfect time to cross names off your list. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high-quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, making every gift feel meaningful and truly one of a kind. This year, I only asked for one thing for the holidays, and if you're a coffee lover, you gotta check this out. It's a Nitro Cold Brew coffee maker. It allows you to make cafe-quality Nitro Cold Brew right from your own kitchen. All you have to do is fill the bag with coffee grounds, add cold filtered water, and refrigerate overnight. In the morning, you just charge, shake, pour, and enjoy Nitro Cold Brew from your own kitchen. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, and diehard football fans to foodies, mixologists, and avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. And here's something we really love. With every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back a dollar to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/madness. That's uncommongoods.com/madness for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. That July, police were called to Brookline Avenue for a domestic violence incident. Christopher was arrested for battery, and Melissa was granted a temporary protective order.
When I saw Melissa in the summer of 1998, when I saw her, she had on long sleeves and blue jeans because he had knocked her down and dragged her along the sidewalk. Me and her dad came and picked her up from where they were living on Brookline Street. When we took her back to the house, and I saw the abrasions on her backside. Her dad did not see those abrasions. Her whole backside was skin up like she'd been dragged along the sidewalk.
Melissa then moved back in with Norma.
Because his mother had custody of Christina and Joey, we went through the Henry County process, and Melissa got the kit, both children, and they lived with me until they went to court, July 29th, I think.
Melissa and the children lived with Norma for approximately 1 week, but that all changed on the day Christopher appeared in court.
Christopher asked the judge to let him speak to Melissa alone, and the judge allowed it. Melissa left with Chris July 29th. I turned the kids over to Kathy, went to daycare and picked up Christina and Joey because I was the only one that could pick them up. And I met Kathy Wolfenberger and handed the kids over to her because Melissa was going home with Chris.
Melissa dropped her request for a protective order, and according to attorney Joel McDermott, the very next day, she made another life-changing decision.
Melissa calls Kathy Wolfenbarger from the Henry County Superior Court and asks her to please come down and sign the papers to make her custody of those children, to make Kathy's custody of Melissa's children permanent. And Melissa permanently relinquishes her parental rights to those children. One of the reasons Melissa originally gave for giving her children over, and she tells this to Kathy, and she tells this also to Christopher's sister independently, was that she did not want her parents anything to do with her children because they are bad people.
Christopher's sister Kimberly remembers the same exchange.
She decided to give custody to my mom. She did, and she said that she did not want her mother or the state to have her children. She just, she did not elaborate. She just said that they were not good people.
Attorney Joel McDermott describes how, by the second half of 1998, Melissa and Christopher had started to drift apart.
After relinquishing her parental rights, Melissa quit working around that time at the Waffle House in East Point with her sister. And for some reason, begins randomly working at a Waffle House clear up in Doraville.
That new job was about 30 minutes north of her home on Brookline Avenue.
No one knows why she went there, but she goes up there and starts working. Melissa started spending more and more time in Doraville, days at a time, working double shifts, spending the night at someone's house, and then multiple days, and days turning into weeks, she would be gone from Christopher's house. And it was at that time that she had started seeing Thomas Michael Dixon.
Melissa had begun an affair with Thomas, a supervisor at the Waffle House.
I was like the shift supervisor, cook, management. She was my friend. She was one of my really close friends. The girls that I worked with are, we it's kind of like a family thing at Waffle House. You know, we established a close relationship when we work with each other. We just became closer. It was her birthday, and I took her out for a birthday dinner across the street from where we worked at in Doraville to a Chinese restaurant. And we had too much to drink, and we went and got a hotel room behind the Waffle House that night. And I was respectful. We didn't have any intercourse or no sexual relations that night. She went home the next morning because she said she had to get back to her kids.
Melissa's birthday was on September 9th, and Thomas said their relationship turned intimate soon after. Not long after that, Melissa was arrested.
In October of that year, Melissa got arrested in Gwinnett County for violating her probation. This was outstanding from 1997 still, and she spent 30 days in jail until early November. The terms of her probation required her to do community service. She was to take GED classes, and she was to report regularly to her probation office, and she had not done any of that.
When she was released in early November, Melissa returned to Doraville to see Thomas whenever she wasn't staying with Christopher. Her mother later shared that their final conversation took place on Thanksgiving Day.
My last conversation with her, she called me on Thanksgiving Day in 1998, told me that she was back with Chris, and she wanted to know what I cooked for Thanksgiving and who all was there. We were all sitting around the dining room table, and she wanted to come down, and she was going to ask his mother to bring her down there. And I said, you don't have to ask her. I'll come get you if you want to come. And anyway, the conversation went on a little bit longer, and my last words to her was, I love you, and you know where I am if you need me.
By December, the distance between Melissa and Christopher had only grown wider.
Melissa was spending as much, if not more, time in Doraville
as she was at Christopher's house. She only occasionally came back. She had her own job. She had her own money. She had her own circle of friends. She had her own freedom. She had no obligations to her children.
Thomas was well aware of Melissa's situation at home.
Yeah, she would talk to me about her abusive relationship with Chris. I mean, she wouldn't really exactly describe the details, but I could see it. It was visible on her body. The marks, the scratches, the bruises.
Throughout December, Melissa spent more and more time with Thomas, sometimes staying at his place for several days at a time.
She stayed with me for about 4 or 5 days during that week because I had came to work one day, and we always go back out and smoke cigarettes, and we would be drinking beer or something while we're at work, and we would talk, and she would tell me, you know, about the abusive relationship she was in.
Then one night, in mid-December, Christopher showed up at the Waffle House.
Chris showed up at the job, and he came inside the restaurant, and I was on the grill cooking, and Melissa was over there sitting down talking to him at the booth. And then she got up and ran to the back room, was crying, and I went to the back room and asked her what's wrong. She was just, I couldn't really understand what she was, because she was crying, hysterical. And she said something about it was him, you know, he's messing with her. So he was on his way out, and I followed him out, and I told him, I said, leave her alone until 9 o'clock. I said, after 9 o'clock, then you can have her, but until then, she's mine.
Thomas said that after her shift ended, Christopher picked Melissa up, and that was the last time he ever saw her. For Melissa's mother, Norma, Christmas came and went without a word from her daughter.
Christmas 1998, she didn't come. She didn't call. I was really upset that she hadn't heard from her, and she didn't call Christmas Day, and she didn't come. So I started worrying immediately. It took me until my birthday to convince her dad that something was wrong, that we start trying to find her.
When Norma didn't receive a call or card on her birthday, that worry turned into certainty. Something was wrong. Carl Patton immediately went to Tina May to ask her if she'd seen her sister.
When my dad walked into the Waffle House in February of 99, and asked me where my sister was. Because Mom, it was right after Mom's birthday. Mom's birthday is February 24th. If my sister didn't go see my mom, call my mom, or send her a card for my birthday, then something was wrong. Because Melissa always, always called Mom, or got in touch with Mom or something on her birthday. Always. She never forgot Mom's birthday. I did. But she always remembered Mom's birthday.
Norma and Carl decided to start looking themselves. Their first stop was the house on Brookline Avenue, where Melissa had been living with Christopher.
After my birthday, we went to Brookline Street in Atlanta to where her and Chris were living. And when we got there, the house was empty. Nobody was living in the house.
So apparently I'm in this stage of life right now that's called the sandwich generation. And if you're in your 40s or 50s, then you're probably very familiar with it. It means caring for aging parents and all that goes with it, while also being the support for your growing children. Now for us, that's a blended family of 5 teenagers, which has felt very overwhelming at times. But the funny thing about this sandwich generation is that no matter how hard we try or how much we do, at the end of the day, we still somehow find a way to beat ourselves up with that critical voice that tells us that we haven't done enough, or we could have handled this or that better. The truth is, it doesn't matter what stage of life you're in. At any given time, you could be carrying any number of things, but that doesn't mean we need to do it without support. Whatever you're carrying, family conflict, self-doubt, a feeling of sadness that won't quite lift, Grow Therapy is built for that. With thousands of therapists and 90-plus specialists, help is closer than you think. For years now, I've come to see therapy as one of the only spaces where I'm not responsible for anyone else, where I can say the truth out loud and not feel like I need to hold it all together. And it doesn't have to be a crisis. Sometimes it's just being human, whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th. Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. Connecting you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., Grow offers both virtual and in-person sessions, including nights and weekends. And you can make your search by what matters to you, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, and get started in as little as 2 days. Now, if you've ever tried to find a therapist before, that's kind of unheard of. Usually for a really good therapist and one that has a specialty, you're on a waiting list for months. The other great thing about Grow Therapy is that it takes your life into consideration. So if you make an appointment and something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There's no subscriptions, no long-term commitments, and you just pay per session. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. With sessions averaging about $21 with insurance and some paying as little as $0 depending on their plan. Just visit growtherapy.com/madness today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/madness. growtherapy.com/madness. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan. We've also provided links in our show notes.
They also went to Christopher's workplace, Action Glass on Avon Avenue, just a short drive from their home. That's when they learned he'd been fired about a week earlier. It was around that time Norma made her first attempt to report her daughter missing.
It actually took me till the whole year of 1999 to be able to convince everybody that something was wrong. And well, when I contacted them about it, they didn't want to, the person I spoke to, I don't know who it was, they told me because she was married and she was over 18 and, you know, she was 21 at the time. And she left her kids and there's no way on this earth that she would have left them because she wanted her kids. That's why she went back to him. That's why she kept going back to him.
It would take another full year until January of 2000 before Norma could finally file an official missing persons report. He said he left on her own, chasing a long-standing dream of starting over in California. He said Melissa often disappeared for days at a time, sometimes even longer, and he just assumed she'd gone for good. At the time, there wasn't much evidence to suggest otherwise, at least not until 2003. After Carl's arrest for murder and Norma's shocking confessions, detectives made a promise they would help find Melissa, and they started by reviewing every unidentified body discovered in the area over the previous 4 years. And to their surprise, it didn't take long to uncover a disturbing case from around the same time Melissa had vanished. On October 29th, 1999, a human head was lying in the middle of Avon Avenue, directly across from Action Glass. Detective Dale Kelly was called to the scene.
We rode to that location. When I rolled up, there was a decomposing head in the road standing upright. There's an old black plastic bag to the side, and there's an old mangy, like a stray dog with matted hair and all, kind of nasty, running around out there. It was on the side of the roadway. There was a black bag. It appeared to have decomposition in it, hair and fluids. We didn't know what sex the person was, so you couldn't ever determine a sex at that time.
2 months later, more plastic bags were found in a nearby wooded area.
And then this was June 3rd. They had gotten in some cadaver dogs from Cobb County. And they came back out there, and that's when we started finding hands, feet, and other body parts. They were also in a black plastic bag, like I described earlier. And they were always double wrapped. The torso, we never found it. There's nothing I could do until, again, you can't start much of an investigation until you know who the person, what sex the person is, who the person is. You have nowhere to start.
The unidentified head, arms, and legs were sent to the medical examiner's office for analysis.
On the left side of the skull, there were some fractures, and there was some bone in the roadway that were described in the report. as well as in an adjacent plastic bag. It appeared that the skull had been struck by a vehicle in the roadway. And it is confounded by the fact that you have incomplete recovery of the remains. They've also been dismembered. There's been concealment of the remains, and there's decomposition. Given the circumstances, I would say that's very unlikely that she died of natural causes.
The cause of death couldn't be determined, but one detail stood out. Tool marks on the bones showed that a reciprocating saw had been used to dismember the body. Then came an error that would stall the case for years. For reasons unclear, the remains were mistakenly classified as belonging to an unidentified male. Because of that mistake, no one connected the remains to Melissa's missing person report. But when detectives reopened the case in 2003, they noticed something impossible to ignore. The remains had been found just steps from Action Glass, where Christopher Wolfenbarger had once worked. Following that lead, investigators compared Melissa's dental records to the unidentified remains, and it was a match. After 4 long years, Melissa had finally been found. But finding her was only the beginning. Now detectives needed to find her killer. In 2003, Detective Alton Calhoun was assigned to lead the investigation into Melissa's death.
Now, we know who these remains belong to, so this is a homicide investigation, and so we started from there, as we would do with all homicides, just trying to gather information on it, now that we know who this person is.
Detectives quickly ruled out Carl as a suspect, despite his own shocking confession to multiple murders. How they reached that conclusion was never publicly explained. With Carl off the list, Calhoun turned his attention to Christopher, Melissa's husband.
He just gave us some information as to how long he had known her, what was their relationship, when was the last time he saw her. You know, he thought that she had moved on with her life. He gave us a time frame when he last saw her, but thought that she had just moved on with her life, and that was just the gist of it. In keeping with what he's telling us about their relationship and moving on, that he knew that she had been seeing someone else and actually identified this person as someone that he knew to be Mike. They worked together. No real definitive answer as to where she was laying her head or anything. And he said he saw her about last of March, April, somewhere in that time frame of 1999, seeing her walking down in the area where they used to live at on near Brookline in that area.
Christopher told detectives the last time he'd seen Melissa was about a month before her remains were found. He claimed he'd run into her on the street and offered her a ride.
They went to lunch. He described, you know, what she looked like, and she was looking kind of rough, and he just... they went to Taco Bell at 8, and he put her out near the MARTA station, and they parted ways, never to see her again. And what I took from that, if that's okay, was that maybe she was just out there on the streets, walking up and down the streets with no real place to go.
Calhoun couldn't disprove Christopher's story, but something just didn't sit right. A husband, estranged or not, who never reported his wife missing? And then... he found what could have been a motive. In July 1998, Christopher had been charged with a domestic violence case involving Melissa. A court hearing was scheduled for March 1999, but when Melissa failed to appear as the complaining witness, the case was dismissed. Had he silenced her to keep her from testifying?
When the body was initially discovered back in 1999, there was some hair and fiber evidence, paint chips and things of that nature that were on the remains.
Investigators began testing every trace of evidence they had. Paint chips, carpet fibers, even a strand of pubic hair found with the remains, hoping to link them to Christopher.
So we know that they lived at 824 Brookline Avenue. We also processed the crime scene as well. We believe could be the possible crime scene. Well, what do we know about the case? This body was cut up and dismembered. If it happened, where would it likely happen? And at this time, our suspect in that case was Christopher Wolfenbarger. went and got a search warrant to get the hair samples from Christopher Wolfenbarger.
Despite detective search through the house on Brookline Avenue, they found nothing. The collected paint samples and carpet fibers didn't match. Even the hair recovered with Melissa's body failed to tie back to Christopher. Having no physical evidence connecting him to the crime, the investigation came to a halt, much to the heartbreak of Melissa's family. For nearly two decades, Melissa's case sat cold. Then in 2021, Detective Jaron Shepherd was assigned to review with fresh eyes and newer tools.
This case was assigned to me. I was tasked with the job of going through the entire case file. At that time, we identified the things that we needed to do, which was re-interviewing witnesses, following up on additional leads, and of course, the new technology that comes into place.
As Detective Shepherd worked back through the file, people surfaced with memories of unsettling comments Christopher had made over the years, including claims that he knew how to dispose of a body without being caught. One of those voices belonged to his daughter Christina, now an adult.
At the time I was 17, there was a rise of true crime shows at that time too, like Law and Order and Criminal Minds and all of that. I was in a criminal justice class in high school, so we would watch some of the episodes during class, and then I would go home and watch more. Anytime there was a case that just seemed interesting or, you know, like not a typical case, we would talk about it when we were in the car. There was a time in particular where he said that that wasn't the way that they should have done it. And Chris said that that wasn't the way that he should have hid the body to begin with. You go out there when they're about to build a new house and put it under where the foundation of the house is going to go. And so when the crew comes back to lay the foundation the next morning, they're just going to continue building the house. It was like, it sounds like you're talking about my mom.
Investigator Richard Stein then took another look at the potential forensic evidence.
The evidence was basically where the severed head was found in the trash bag. So the trash bag had a knot to it. The knot was believed to be untampered with and not opened up or closed. So take the knot and test the knot, slowly unravel it, trying to pull out whatever DNA may have been in the knot, if there was any.
It was their best chance at a direct link, but the results fell short.
A mixture of DNA consists with originating from at least five contributors, with at least two male contributors. Christopher Wolfenbarger is excluded as a possible contributor to the mixture obtained from item 8.1.
Detective Shepherd met with Christopher again in 2021 and then in 2023. Across those interviews, small details shifted. His answers just weren't lining up the way they should have.
You can ask a question in many different ways, and the truth is going to stay the same. We find consistency. That's what we do with detectives, is homicide detectives. We talk to all type of people that lies all the time. There's one thing that's going to be consistent, is the truth. So we look for consistency. When there's inconsistency, there's lies.
Other pieces of circumstantial evidence added to the picture, including talk that, in February 1999, Christopher had been fired from Action Glass for stealing a reciprocating saw, the same type of tool the medical examiner believed was used to dismember Melissa's body.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
On August 6th, 2024, after 25 years, detectives made their move, arresting Christopher and charging him with Melissa's murder. According to Detective Stephen O'Hare, the arrest itself did little to support Christopher's claims of innocence.
In the attempt to apprehend Christopher Wolfenberger, who had an outstanding warrant for murder, I had reached out to the U.S. Marshals and requested their assistance, including assistance from the Spalding County Sheriff's Office. We reasonably believed that Christopher was at his address. We utilized his cell phone by GPSing it, and that allowed us to believe that he was on site, as the cell phone showed to be at his property that was identified to belong to him. We arrived on site. U.S. Marshals took the lead as they went to the actual door to attempt to serve the warrant. They approached the door with a 8-man stack. Basically, it's a series of individuals who obviously are armed, and their job is to make contact and attempt to apprehend the individual. And in this case, they did knock on the door, and they did identify themselves and specifically call out for Mr. Wolfenberger to come out and surrender.
But instead of surrendering, Christopher chose to hide inside his own home.
We actually did 3 or 4 searches to try to locate this individual. And it's not unusual to have people get creative in their houses or locations and come up with locations for them to hide. So we continued to kind of pull on boards, try to move mirrors, just do second and third searches to make sure that somebody didn't miss something. So as I maneuvered out for probably the second or third time, out to what was, I can only describe as a makeshift kitchen that was created in one of the garages, I kind of maneuvered around, and I noticed on the right side of it, there was like a wine rack that appeared to be loose. So I started manipulating it and kind of saw that it was moving a little bit. And when I looked inside, I could see what turned out to be Mr. Wolfenberger hunched over. I could see his back. And he was hunched over, hiding.
After Christopher was taken into custody, law enforcement held a press conference to announce the long-awaited arrest.
Today, we're here to talk about the 1999 murder of Melissa Wolfenberger. Specifically, on August 6th, yesterday, we took into custody Christopher Wolfenberger, and he was charged with the murder of Melissa Wolfenberger. Together with us today is the mother and sister of Melissa, and we just can't express how happy we are that you're joining us today for this moment.
Norma was the first to speak for the family.
We have finally made it. He's in custody, and now we just need to get over the last hurdle and get him convicted, because she'd been missing 4 years. She laid in the morgue 4 years. Before she was identified. And that was a long, hard 4 years. But I don't have to watch the news anymore, because we got him. He's in jail. And Lord help him, he stays there.
Melissa's sister, Tina May, stepped up to speak next.
It's been a long wait, 25 years. But finally, hopefully, we will get justice for Melissa. She didn't deserve what she got. And I hope anybody who's in a domestic violence situation, please get out. Don't take it. Because this, it could easily be you. It could be your sister. It could be your mother. Make sure they get away. From day one, we knew it was Christopher. There was never, ever any doubt in our minds who did this. My mom has said, I don't know how many times, you know, when she first met him, There was just evil in his eyes. That is so true. If you look at a picture of Charlie Manson, you see the same thing. And it's the same thing with Christopher. And I saw his mugshot earlier, and it's still there.
During the conference, lead detective Jaron Shepherd confirmed that new evidence had surfaced, but declined to share any specifics, citing the ongoing case.
Let me start off with certain things, certain parts of the evidence. I want to protect the integrity of the case going forward, so I can't disclose certain evidence. But we look at everything when it comes to cold case, especially DNA. I don't want to point to any specific piece of evidence because it's important moving forward. Eventually, it will come out on how the case was put together.
In December 2024, Melissa's father, confessed serial killer Carl Patton, died in prison. For Norma and Tina, it meant one chapter had closed, but another, the one they'd been waiting on for 25 years, was finally about to begin. 8 months later, in August 2025, Christopher Wolfenbarger finally went on trial. The state's theory was straightforward. Throughout 1998, Christopher had shown a clear pattern of domestic violence toward Melissa. By the end of that year, she was prepared to leave him. Prosecutors claimed he killed her out of jealousy and rage. They argued that Christopher was the only person who knew the area where her remains were found, just across from his old workplace. In opening statements, they told jurors he'd been fired from his job for stealing a reciprocating saw, the same kind of tool used to dismember her body. Witnesses added to the state's circumstantial case. Christopher had never reported Melissa missing, never searched for her body, and even bragged on more than one occasion he knew how to dispose of a body. Even his behavior during the arrest, hiding from police inside his own home, was presented as a sign of guilt. But the case had cracks. The prosecution offered no significant new evidence. Most of what they presented had already been known for more than 20 years. And all the recent forensic testing, including DNA and hair analysis, excluded Christopher as a contributor. The prosecution highlighted discrepancies in Christopher's statements during police interviews, playing hours of his interviews for the jury. The state leaned heavily on inconsistencies in his interviews, playing long stretches of those for the jury, but compared against fading memories and the uncertainty of 25 years, his inconsistencies seem less like deceit and more like time doing what time does. Even the state's strongest circumstantial point, the claim that Christopher had stolen a reciprocating saw, fell apart under testimony.
Now, while working at Action Glass, do you recall Mr. Wolfenbarger asking to borrow any tools?
To the best of my knowledge, he did.
Okay. What type of tool do you remember him asking to borrow?
I'm not sure.
And do you recall him asking about whether or not he ever, I think at the time he thought, stole the saw? Do you remember him asking you about that?
He asked about if something was stolen, and that I told him I didn't know. I couldn't recall.
To your knowledge, did he ever return that saw?
I don't recall if he did or not.
Okay.
Not only did the employer not remember any theft, but he said Christopher had been fired for an entirely different reason.
He had wrecked my van and then wasn't where he was supposed to be making a delivery and couldn't give me an answer to what actually happened, and so I just let him go. Well, he said somebody hit him, but he couldn't give me a tag number or anything, so.
The defense seized the opening.
What hard evidence exists in this case? I will submit to you that not one bit of direct evidence in this case points to that man right there. I'm not saying there's no direct evidence in this case. There's lots of it. There is obviously the remains. There is the manner in which those remains were recovered. But lots of evidence that came from the remains. There's lots of evidence. And you heard the detective sit there and tell you, we specifically sent this off for testing. Some of it more than once. Whoever's care that was also not his. Whoever's pubic hair that was also not his. Wherever those paint chips came from, it was not from his residence. None of it matched. Yes, we found DNA. Yes, it was a viable profile that represented five people, two of whom at least were male. And they submitted Christopher's DNA sample, Christopher Wolfenbarger, is excluded It's interesting to me that you just heard the district attorney tell you all the facts and evidence in this case point to one man. But he's not talking about this hard evidence, is he? Because there's a bunch of that, and not a single bit of it points to this man. All of it points away from this man.
They argued police had suffered from tunnel vision, zeroing in on Christopher from the beginning while ignoring other possible suspects.
But Detective Shepard, or maybe it was Detective Calhoun, one of the two got on the stand and said, there's only been one suspect in this case from day one. Well, when the results keep pointing away and pointing away and pointing away, maybe there should have been a difference. Maybe you should have asked some more questions of the neighbors or the family. They never investigated that family. They never investigated anybody else. Where are the records of the tests of paint chips for a single other person's house? Where are the records for a search warrant from a single other individual's house? Where are the search warrants getting hair or pubic hair or DNA from anybody else in this investigation?
The defense said investigators never even looked at other leads.
And that's where people like Carl Patton do come in, and Norma Patton. The whole thing about the five murders and the dumping bodies of the Ripper and the covering it up for many, many years. But we also find out that one of his victims was a drug dealer that Carl worked for. We also find out that he engaged in contract killing. We also find out that there was a member of their family, in some common law way, whose father, Carl, had killed. And he didn't find out until sometime later. The same man also hung out in that household, was friends with the Pat family, and later was accused of molesting Melissa. And Norma, and with Melissa's testimony, apparently tried to get him indicted. Does this man have a motive to get revenge against Carl? Yes. Does he have a motive to get revenge against Norma and even Melissa? Yes. Is it reasonable to believe he could have been involved? Absolutely. Is it reasonable to believe that one of her new boyfriends was involved when he found out she had a husband? Did somebody kill Melissa and throw it where it could be found, right where Chris worked, to send a message?
According to police, Melissa's father, a confessed serial killer, had quickly been ruled out. Her ex-boyfriend, Thomas Michael Dixon, never had his DNA tested, despite being a convicted felon who later served 10 years for bank robbery. There was also another man, accused of molesting Melissa, and was believed to hold a grudge against her family, who was never investigated. And there was always the chance Melissa had been killed by someone else entirely. So the question then became, how could police have ruled anyone out of their initial investigation? They didn't know when, where, or even how Melissa was murdered. So how could anyone claim an alibi? Unless they weren't anywhere near the area between December 1998 and April 1999. According to the defense, there was only one person the actual evidence could eliminate. Christopher Wolfenbarger.
So what you have happened is you have the state telling you a story that they want you to believe that leads to a murder for which they have no evidence, an act for which they have no evidence, an intent for which they have no evidence, and an unlawful killing for which they have no evidence. And they want you to follow their story to judge something based on no evidence. And all the other evidence in the case that points away from Christopher, every bit of hard evidence in the case that points away from Christopher.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
When the case was finally handed to the jury, they deliberated for only 2 hours before reaching their unanimous verdict.
In the Superior Court of Fulton County, State of Georgia, the State of Georgia versus Christopher Wolfenbarger, count one, we the jury find the defendant not guilty this 22nd day of August, 2025.
The news of Christopher's acquittal devastated Melissa's family. After 27 years of waiting, they watched who they believed was her killer walk free. But the verdict also exposed something deeper about the American justice system. How tunnel vision can blind investigators to obvious alternatives. How easy a circumstantial case can crumble under proper scrutiny. And how the desperate need for closure can sometimes eclipse the search for truth. The central question remains, did police and prosecutors fail to build a strong enough case against a guilty man, or did they fail to investigate all leads and put an innocent man on trial? Either way, Melissa's story remains unfinished. Her family still waits for answers, for proof, for peace, for something that makes sense after all these years. The case has gone cold again, but for Melissa's family, their fight isn't over. They hold on to hope that someday someone will come forward and the truth about what had happened to the young mother who loved her children and cared for every creature she met will finally come to light. Until that day comes, Melissa Wolfenbarger's story serves as a reminder that some wounds never fully heal, some questions never get answered, and sometimes the search for truth and justice never truly ends. Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @madnesspod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores. Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.